You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
My name is Liv Moore, and I died, sort of. I had a promising career and a great fiancé. Then I went to the world's worst boat party and got turned into a zombie. Now I work at the morgue for access to brains, but brain eating has side effects. I take on the victim's personality traits and have visions which I use to help solve their murders. I work with a detective who thinks I'm a psychic, and my boss, the medical examiner, the only person who knows my secret. I'm a crime-fighting zombie.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. This is the iZombie BoobTube version. As we talk about the CW's new show, this is going to be about Season 1, Episode 3, The Exterminator. And I know I said I wasn't going to rename any of the episodes, so I'm not going to rename this one, even though after watching it, I found what I'm going to have as the alternate title or the tagline, which is Two's Company, Three's a Horde. That was such a great line. Such an awesome line. My name is Heather, and I am joined by my Polish podcasting partner in crime, Alex. Hello, Alex.
Hello, everybody.
I realized I could use podcasting partner in crime again because we are on a crime show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Plus, crime doesn't stop just because you're not on a procedural.
But see, I think this is a procedural. I think it very much is. It's just got
it
the
is
zombie
with
twist.
Zombies.
We were talking about the fact, like, if you listen to our Gotham podcast, which you should be, and you have a chance again in a couple weeks when we start those back up again, we always have to kind of go through and figure out who we're going to talk about and what order and what happened on the show. And it's very much like Lost. Oh, you thought I wasn't going to work it in, did you? I forgot on the last episode. Where you've got so many different things going on that you have to figure it out. This one, iZombie, is definitely being a procedural. We have our crime, we have the whole Liv and company, all of her and her friends and her emotions, and then we have Team Zombie, her adversary. So I think that's pretty much our pattern for this series.
Hey, I like it when shows are being consistent. It's a good thing.
I'm fine with it because it actually seems to be giving them room for the characters to grow and do things. I mean, we learned more about some other characters again in this, and I saw some development. So I'm going to say the structure is giving them that chance to really look at the characters.
Definitely.
So I'm fine with that. One thing, though, that we did not talk about in the last episode, Brother, Can You Spare a Brain?, was something that you, Alex, actually brought up in the first episode, the one I did rename. You Are What You Eat. And that's how you hope they were going to be continuing that comic panel look and part of the show.
Yeah. I love what they're doing. I mean, I could probably use a different intro music over the credits, because that is just not my sound. But graphically and visually, it's amazing, and it feels like a comic book show. And every time they come back from commercials and they have a different panel and this little description box at somewhere, the descriptions are hilarious. I mean, take an opening of this episode. Like, this isn't going to end well.
Yeah, it's great because I watched those and I'm like, these could easily be titles for the episode. We had in this one, What Could Possibly Go Wrong? That was the first one. Yeah. And then Dead Alert. Here's one that I think is good. Mistrial and Error, when we were starting to talk about Peyton and her whole thing when Liv kind of derailed her career thing. We had Friends in Low Places, which was really good for the bar sequence. This one I think was actually my favorite of the episode. Driving Miss Crazy. I
yeah
love that one. Crunch Time and Eating Your Feelings. So these are, I mean, they really do encapsulate what you're about to see, and it really does kind of keep that comic book feel to it. So I do like that aspect.
I'm pretty sure the same people who named the episodes give those little descriptions for the opening panels.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not the same people who named the characters.
No.
Do you know how I can tell?
How?
Because names of the characters are lame. Except for, of course, Liv Moore. Oh, never not funny. But the people who named the episodes and those little panels, they are brilliant. They deserve a raise. You hear me, CW? They deserve a raise.
I really do like it, and it makes me giggle when I see those, you know, yes. Driving Miss Crazy, you're like, before you get into that whole part of the episode.
It really gives that feel of the show. This show does not take itself too seriously. And those panels drive that point in so well. So well.
Yeah. When you've got things, you've got so many great lines, like when she was talking about Ravi was saying how he's put that alert out there for Seattle Zombie, and she starts talking about Z-Date instead of J-Date. You already have all these great little quips in there that help make a situation that, I mean, these are crime dramas about murder, and then you have a zombie that is eating the victim's brain. It could get very dark and heavy, and I think it really does help add some levity to it.
Keep up the good work.
But we like that. We like that. Let's go ahead and start talking about Liv and Company, with her emotions, with her interactions, because we did have her with Marcy, her friend that actually got her to go to the party, her roommate Peyton, and we did have another little bit there with Major. And something that I really like is the juxtaposition between Liv's emotion in this episode and in the last episode. She was so last time just, you know, talking about with the lips just like they had eaten a peach and the skin soft as, you know, honey and all this kind of stuff. And then this week we have her eating a brain that is very cold and very calculating and really distances herself from all of her emotions.
I kept wondering after I've seen the second episode, what would they do next to top that?
Mm-hmm.
Because where do you go after you gave your characters such intense emotions?
Mm-hmm.
And even though a brain of a sociopath did not make it on my list of possibilities, once it happened, it did seem like a pretty obvious choice.
Right.
Because the best thing you can do after what she did with episode 2 is to go to the other extreme. Make her completely cold and emotionless. And once again, Rose did a remarkable job.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot believe the range on this girl. She's amazing. But yeah, watching her as a sociopath, that was interesting.
Yeah, I think you're right. We really did have to go to the opposite extreme. We ended with her last week being all amorous for Major and going over there and just emotions just pouring out and over and just getting so much out of life, that to go to the other extreme and just be so cold and calculating, this trivia master. Okay, you talk about how she does with her Eastern European accents and all this kind of, she was great at how she delivered that trivia too, because there was a lot of technical things in there when she's talking about the gun or she's talking about this fact or that fact, that she delivered just like somebody who was a trivia master would just go, look at all the information I know. Aren't I wonderful? So she's doing a fabulous job there. But seeing her, when she sees Major kissing the other woman and playing Jenga. Okay, I have to admit, I love Peyton going, you're not upset about the Jenga and the kissing and all this? Her being so just dead and cold and whatever, I don't care, you know. So he's moving on, was a great juxtaposition between how we've seen her acting with Major before. The longing or the I wish everything. It was a good break. And her realizing it too. I loved it when she said, this brain is going to suck. As she starts realizing that this lack of emotion and lack of caring, when she should be caring, when she screws her best friend out of something that could make her career, and she just doesn't care. She's like, I should care. So she's staying self-aware. And Ravi, because Ravi rocks, realizes this, that she is separate. You know, she is separate. I think up until now, maybe she thought that the brain was her, the brain that she ate really was her, and that her personality, her unique personality, wasn't still there.
I liked I liked it that they made a point of ensuring that the viewers know that even though Liv picks up some skills, picks up knowledge, picks up emotion from the brains that she eats, she remains herself.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this was one of the most important points in this episode, possibly of the beginning of the show, because it's like little side note. You know those little ads that they sometimes show, this is your brain on drugs.
Right.
Right? Yeah. This is your zombie on sociopath.
Right.
It was really important, and I feel like if they didn't make this point so soon, a lot of viewers would mix it up and would continue watching thinking that Liv literally becomes what she eats.
Exactly.
That she changes. And with her inner dialogue, in this episode, she was so self-aware, because a sociopath, while they might acknowledge that they have this, you know, brain thing and they don't feel emotions, they would not be self-aware of it as they process information, right? They would just not feel, and Liv knew she was supposed to be feeling something in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't there.
Yeah.
So it was like, it was blocked. It didn't disappear completely, but it was blocked because of the food.
Right.
Or brain, you know.
Well, and I love when Ravi later, you know, gives her the option. Here's this old dead woman that basically just died of old age. No big trauma, no big thing. You know, this is a nice, safe and easy, eat her brain. It's just so weird talking this way. Eat her brain and, you know, all the sociopath will go away. And she's like, yeah. And then he says, of course, you won't be able to get justice for this Wally guy. You won't be able to actually finish this crime. And so she has to make that choice. What does she do? I could get rid of this lack of pain and this sociopath and things that are scaring me and have this nice, easy out and go back to happy-go-lucky zombie life. But if I do that, you know, murderers are going to get away with things. Things are going to, bad are going to happen. And it's this choice, you know, to choose between what's easy and what's right. And I like that Ravi, who's been such a scientist and a friend and some comic relief, was also like her Jiminy Cricket, her conscience there. You know, it's, you have to make this decision. It's your decision, but here's the two sides.
Hmm. Another reason why hashtag Ravi rocks.
We want to get that one trending there. I think we're going to have to do that during a live tweet. We need to get that one really going. I really did like how Rose also was playing this when she does screw over her friend, Peyton, totally cold. When Major comes to her asking for help with the kid that's part of that shelter or after school kind of thing, you know, how people are still in her life. Just because Major's moving on, he's not cutting her out either. You know, he's not doing anything. He's trying to have a normal existence with her, but how cold she played it and calculated. And that played over into the whole thing with Marcy and her and Ravi going to check out Marcy. Can I tell you how many times that look on her face scared the crap out of me? And I was like, Ravi, can you please not be standing with her behind you and the pit in front of you? Because I just had I'm like, sociopaths might push you in or might do something with you. I was like so scared.
Just to see what happens.
Exactly. I was so scared. I'm glad. I knew it was going to happen. You knew the way they were setting up that Ravi was going to somehow end up in there with poor Marcy, who, just a moment for Marcy. I'm going to do a Walking Dead thing here, like a little in memoriam kind of thing. It's like, can we take a moment to acknowledge the passing of poor Marcy, who has been down there for up to 6 months in a pit, slowly becoming full on zombie mode. poor girl.
Yeah, something apparently she cannot come back from.
Yes. So we know that, yeah, we know that Liv has to keep eating brains because otherwise she's going to turn into Marcy. So that was another really important thing, I think, for us to know, that it's not just chill out until I find you a cure and you don't have to eat brains. She has to.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Ravi really holding on to his Hippocratic oath and that, you know, maybe I can help her. We've got to try. I'm a doctor. You're a doctor. We've got to do this. And him falling in and hurting himself and looking up to Liv for help. And she is in full on sociopath mode. That look in her eyes was very scary.
Yeah, it was. I have to digress though.
It's a sci-fi for me podcast. Woohoo. Okay.
Yeah. Because, I have a confession to make. Because in episode 2, when Peyton first showed up, I had no idea who she was and why she was there, because I could not, for the love of me, recall her from the pilot. And I thought they recast Marcy with a different actress, because I was so convinced that this was the same person. And why is she suddenly white? And why is she suddenly a different actress? And isn't this Ali Mihalka from Hellcats? I was so confused. So the fact that Marcy came back, even though, you know, she was a zombie and she died.
Right.
Again. But I liked that they somehow, you know, explained it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess what happened behind the scenes is that the actress who played Marcy didn't test well or something. I don't know. That they didn't pick her up for
I think it was always supposed to be that, because they had a different actress for Peyton and they recast her. But I don't think Marcy and Peyton were ever supposed to be the same character. Marcy was, because Marcy, if you remember in the pilot, was someone who Liv thought hated her. Liv was like, all the residents, other residents hate me.
Yeah.
So it was that olive branch that Marcy kind of gave out to her. Come on to the party. Thanks, Marcy. Great party. Great gig.
Yeah, thanks for that. But, you know, I got confused with Peyton. So I was really glad that they gave her a bigger part in this episode,
mm-hmm.
because it helped me get over this little, who is this person? Why am I watching her? What is she doing here? It took that away, and instead I had an actual character who has an actual career.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's not just there to stare at the painting Liv painted. Because she was on the brain, and I really like it when they have characters, female characters, and they aren't just two-dimensional, you know, sexy lamps that are supposed to be there and, I don't know, look pretty. Though she does look pretty. I like her clothes. I'm just saying. Her wardrobe is very good. But she has a career and she has emotions, and it's all complex, and I really liked this episode as far as characters and Liv's interactions go, I gotta say.
Well, and they are continuing this progress of each episode. They seem to really be fleshing out different characters and making them not just a walk-on role. So I do agree. I like the fact that we had, because Marcy's the one that in the first episode, not Marcy, sorry, Peyton was the one in the first episode who basically said, you know, I've stood by you. I can't take this anymore. I need you to step it up and stop brooding and stop wallowing. And it was Peyton's pushing there as a best friend in a way that really a best friend is supposed to and really only can do, you know, slap her upside the head and say, snap out of it. She's the one that helped Liv move on and realize that there was these different aspects. So it was important for her to have a little bit of fleshing out there to become a real person and a real character. And I like that she again said, you know, you screwed me. I can't believe this. You did this. And, you know, she was, you know, acting out of emotion that I think a friend would when they feel something bad has happened, that their best friend has done something. So they, I think she was well fleshed out. She is a reoccurring character, not a main cast. But I think when we see her, we're going to believe her a lot more.
Yeah, definitely. Plus, I even though she's not series regular, I like that they chose such an early episode to flesh her out.
Yeah.
Because that's something about female characters in general. We have female friends. There is not one woman on Earth, I think, who doesn't have at least one female friend. And they don't have to be BFFs, you know, friends for life, forever and ever. But every woman has at least one friend who she talks to, she doesn't have to room with her. But I like how realistic they keep the show, even though, you know, there's zombies and psychic power that we try to pass as actual and real. So I like it. I like it.
She did good. But back to Ravi and Marcy.
Oh, yes. Always.
Before we digressed. That's where we were. So Ravi falls into the pit and he's calling up for Liv's help. And Liv is standing there very psychopath, almost like, let's let this play out. And it actually kind of reminded me a little bit of in Return of the Jedi when Luke is calling out to Vader, you know, Father, please. And it's like it snaps him out of, I'm evil, wait, you're my son. It's like, I'm a psychopath. Wait, you're my friend. I don't want this to happen. When she jumped in and jumped down on Marcy and started really kicking her ass to save her friend and went on full on zombie mode, FOZM, F-O-Z-M there, I was really glad to see that, you know, and I don't think that, to me, Ravi never really looked scared that she wasn't going to save him. I think he always knew that Liv was there for him. Mm. He was just, come on, snap out of it. I didn't really see fear in his eyes about Liv. I saw the fear about Marcy.
That just show how close they gotten since Liv started to work in the morgue. And that friendship just got deeper once he learned her secret. But at the same time, I like that he trusts her.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. It tells you a lot about him as a person. But at the same time, this evil part of me, tiny little evil part that's
tiny,
almost non-existent and you hardly can see it, it kind of wishes that this fate, this blind faith that he has in Liv came back to bite him in the ass. Because that would be a nice plot twist. Of course, I don't want it, because I love Ravi and Ravi rocks. But it would be a nice plot line, what that would do to their friendship.
I think it would be good
maybe season
later
two
on.
Or three. Yeah.
I think we need to have this establishment, because I love the little interaction that they had afterwards. I mean, first off, when she had that moment of fear when she's on full in zombie mode and Marcy is now dead, like dead is dead kind of thing. And she turns around to Ravi and she's still the eyes and everything. And then she slowly comes out of it and does her whole, you can get your sample now. I'm like, well, that's kind of a little moment there of tension. But afterwards, when they got out, she says, I almost let you die. And he says, but you still found your way through. And I think that was really important because now they do have that super bond that maybe later on in the season would be good to test and would be good to try, like you were suggesting. I think they need to be super solid, though, for quite a few episodes.
Hey, I'm not saying do it now. I'm saying do it at some point in the future to keep things interesting.
The final thing I want to say really on the whole Liv-in company thing is I like how last week she had this super passion from the artist, Javier. And this time she was so super cold that she had that temptation of not wanting to feel this pain of seeing Major kissing someone else and moving on, of not remembering that she just killed Marcy completely. There's no coming back now for Marcy at all. And she was tempted to go ahead and eat more of the psychopath's brain to keep this block of not feeling it. But she chose not to. And that she did make that decision, you know, this revelation that, you know, that Marcy was a person and that she killed her. Even if it was out of kindness, you know, let Marcy not continue to exist in this horrendous walker state. That moment, though, when she dropped those pearls off, I that really got me. I thought that was such a great moment that she's taking responsibility for what she's done and realizing that there are people and emotions and consequences on the other side. It's not just, well, they're dead and whatever. That it it was able to bring closure, a little bit of closure to Marcy's family, so.
Yeah. Plus, I think that one scene would not have as much impact if we spend the entire episode of Liv having feelings, having emotions.
Exactly.
Because she was so cold and sociopathic and emotionless through the entire entire episode. That last scene of her dropping off those pearls just hit you in the feels. Because, oh my God, this is what it looks like when she has all those emotions flooding in. The same was when she was watching Major the second time at the end of the episode. And she was rewatching that one clip over and over again.
Which we do.
And
we torture ourselves. Here's the salt in the wound. Let me just keep pouring salt and lemon juice and on it. And yeah.
Yeah, because, hey, maybe at some point it'll stop hurting. But yeah, let's do it again and again. And she was doing it, and you could see how much it, well, messed her up. And I think those scenes were so much more powerful because we didn't get any emotional feedback from her through the entire episode.
Right.
So props for whoever designed it that way. Writer, director, I don't know, but props to you.
Well, and it all started with our crime, really, because we had Liv getting a little bit hungry. I loved when she said early on, your skull just turned into a giant animated ham. And Robbie's like, okay, let's get you some brains. It's time for you to eat. Yeah. And they have this mild-mannered, hey, it was just this exterminator, pest exterminator, who was involved in a hit and run. Woohoo! This will be easy. And we find out that he's actually a cold-blooded psychopath hitman. And I liked watching her trying to convince Babineau that he needs, that this other trial that is a, or this other crime that has been solved, that is a lock, that, woohoo, everybody, we found this homeless guy who was responsible for all this and blah, blah, blah. Liv going, no, you have the wrong guy. You have to do this, convincing him. I loved that moment when she walked away and she said, I'll man up for both of us. And then she kind of realizes, wow, that's not something I would say. That must be this cold psychopath, you know, no emotion kind of thing. And just slapping you, Babineau, you're not doing your job. Let's go for it. I liked that she was back to after last week where she was off on everything. Her passions had her pinpointing the wrong people. And Babineau was right. This was one where she wasn't completely right and he wasn't completely right. They were right together. And they, in this one, came together as a team, finally. It's Piggy in the Brain. I love that. Piggy in the Brain. That was fabulous.
That was adorable. Once again, person who didn't name the character named something awesome.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a pattern, I feel. But I liked how they went from Liv is completely right in the pilot, and how can even Babineau try to be a cop if he can't solve this tiny little thing, to Babineau was right all along, because hello, he's a cop, he has experience, to this episode, where it was a journey, and it was a little, you know, push and pull, and they had to get the thing right together. So I liked how, even though I remember us being completely annoyed in the pilot with this, oh, how did you even solve crimes before me?
Mm-hmm.
Now that we are three episodes in, I liked how they made it a journey. It wasn't mm-hmm. such a flawless, a faultless friendship Liv had with Ravi. No, they have to, you know, work out some kinks for it to work. So, yeah, props for that as well.
I think they've really grown them well together as a team. Mm. I believe them as a team now. Before, they were just kind of, they happened to be together. They just, you know, the first one, he's trying to believe her that she's a psychic and she's doing all this stuff. The second one, he's going to her thinking it's an easy fix. Yeah, look, I know who did mm-hmm. it. Just give me the stuff so I can get home earlier and watch TV. You know, watch. I want to get to the game. This is one where yeah. they were working together. And for whatever faults or whatever, I think the writers have gotten into a good procedural feel of yes. progressing everybody believably. They're not suddenly best buds. We've have now about a month of them doing things together, but they're proving each other little bits here and there. She's finding things that help him figure out things, that it just keeps going back and forth instead of being so one-sided. And I have to admit, I really loved that interrogation room scene at the end with the cocky agent guy, whatever, who was the one that actually did it. The way that Liv and Babineau played it, and they had all this information, which was all from what she saw, you know, repeating yeah. all this stuff, but then having Ravi barely being able to be seen, but in that construction worker, sanitation worker garb, to scare the living crap out of the suspect into thinking that they actually have somebody, a witness, that has all this information. And they didn't. They just had him sign a confession. And then being able to bring in Peyton to the, you know, I've made amends with Peyton because now she's going to be prosecuting this. And look at this, you know, you either sign this plea deal or we're going for the guns. And this is, you know, last bit. And Babineau gets to be the man and Liv, you know, it just worked so perfectly.
It was, generally, I think this was a really strong episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really strong case. I liked everything about that case, everything about the way they progressed from point A to point B to point C, I liked it. It really felt like if you discarded the zombie thing, this could be a CBS show, like just based on the crime of the week. Yeah, I yeah. could see it running as a procedural for 10 years on CBS, because that's what CBS does.
Yeah. Well, because, I mean, yeah, other than the zombie part, it basically is part medium and part the mentalist kind of thing. You know, it's like,
yeah,
is she really exactly. psychic, or is she just like a Sherlock Holmes type that can really read everything really well? Well, no, it's option C. She's a zombie and is getting all this from the brains. But yeah, exactly. I think they've taken what they know so well from Veronica Mars, all those years doing Veronica Mars and doing that and other procedurals
yeah.
to lock what you need to do to make it believable and the crime believable and grow and be able to develop the characters. I really did enjoy that. And with the exception of the name Clive Babineau, I was happy with the entire, we really want to just, can't you just use your real name, Malcolm? I mean, that's so much better. But although it won't work with next week's title, which we'll get to later.
I know! But next week's title, spoilers, is one thing that makes up for the terrible name.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I could see naming a character just so I can use it in a pun. I can totally see it. I don't know if I'll be able to live with that character for seasons and seasons, but I can see naming character just so I can use him in a title.
Yeah, well, we'll see if that continues on with the other character that we don't really care for the name. Let's go to Team Zombie and Blaine De Beers. Sorry. I had to take a moment there to...
yeah. To just... Obligatory sigh. Yeah. How terrible the name is. And
now,
we can continue.
For however much we hate his character name, I am really loving how David Anders is playing this and what he's doing with this character. I'm glad that I was wrong that when he came to confront Liv, that she didn't just say, well, I saw you with such and such, and then he explains his way out and they're all happy, happy, happy. He comes and confronts her, and she confronts him right back, which is probably part psychopath and all that. And they are definitely not on the same side. They both know this.
They are not best buds.
No, and they're not gonna be. And I'm excited because I really thought they were gonna go the other way. I thought they were gonna make Blaine be able to reason with her, and she gives him a benefit of a doubt. I think what we're gonna see is there's not going to be anything concrete for a while. And so Ravi will continue to give him the benefit of a doubt because he's being the scientist and the doctor and the, you know, wants to find the cure.
And he sees good in people because they are mostly dead when he meets them.
Exactly. They're very well dead when he usually sees them. So ones that are dead, but only mostly dead, that's a novelty for him. So I think that's going to be a contention. I hope, in future episodes, where we're going to have that tension between Liv and Ravi because of Blaine. And, you know, maybe Ravi trying to rationalize it out or something because he doesn't fully know, doesn't fully get it. So I'm really glad that with Blaine, they didn't just make everything happy-go-lucky and that he's, you know, you stood me up. Why did you stand me up? And she tells him and he's like, so I guess it's every zombie for himself. Guess it is. You know, it's like lines have been drawn, gauntlets have been thrown. I'm ecstatic.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting, especially with the closing scene.
Oh.
When...
Yeah.
Oh, poor baby. He is not going to find his friend, that's one. And, yeah, I'm pretty sure next week his Major will be back. Meeting with Liv, telling her how his little, you know, project friend or something is missing now.
Yeah.
Because we know what happened. Brain ordered takeout.
Yeah.
Basically. That's how I think it's going to be.
Well, we do have, I mean, this goes back to my alternate title for this episode, which we're not using. We're calling it The Exterminator. But the whole two's company, three's a horde, he now has, because he's got our cougar, our sugar mama. So we have the sugar mama zombie.
Sugar mama.
And now we're going to have, you know, the young buck zombie, which, okay, if you're going and looking for your friend who has gone missing, who has probably gone missing not because of something nice and happy, but maybe something Blaine inspired, very possibly, don't do it alone. And don't tell some guy who, hey, I think I know where he is. He's right down the street. Come with me. Don't say that no one is waiting for you, that you are totally alone. Ugh.
I know. The moment I heard that, I was like, what are you doing? Have you not seen any TV show in the last 20 years?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of an idiot says that, yeah, nobody's waiting for me? But maybe it's a guy thing, because, I don't know, they feel so safe, like nothing can touch them. The first thing any woman would do, hey, I have my boyfriend on speed dial, like, he's waiting for me to check in, like, a time limit that I'm not going to share.
Exactly. Now, I do, which is something that you brought up here, I do like the fact that he's brought in because of Major, so we now do have this continuing reason for Major to be in the story and in her life, but not in the unrequited love kind of way. So I like that they're developing different things there. And it just
yes.
really And it just really goes to show how Blaine really is just awful. I don't even know how to say it. He is just, he's not a guy that I want to meet in an alley.
Nope. No, really. Especially now that you know that, yeah, either the guy becomes food or a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of those options appeal to me.
I think you were definitely right, because in the last episode, you know, you were talking about him being zombie zero or zombie one, either one, but that you were talking about how his intent is to keep spreading it. And I think he is making his own little zombie army.
Zombie army.
Yeah, I really do. And, you know, talk about coming back and biting him in the butt.
Yeah, but you gotta wonder. You gotta wonder, why does he need other zombies? I mean, if you want to stay logical, the more zombies there are, the more difficult it would be to get food, right? Because it's kind of something you need. So, if I was a zombie, I would keep it to an absolute minimum.
See, I think he's going the other way. I mean, he was, you know, a drug dealer. He was low end of the totem pole before. And I think he now sees a way that he can be the, you know, the crime boss, the big boss, the head guy. He's got his money. We've got financing coming in because that's what Sugar Mama is there for.
Sugar Mama.
Is she's going to finance this so that she can stay not full-on zombie, not Marcy zombie-like. You know, and he needs lieutenants to go out and do some of the dirty work. He doesn't want to have to be going out and doing this all the time. You know, he wants to sit back and be cool and smooth and suave and control. And, you know, he wants to do the whole Falcone Maroni thing, the Falcone.
I did not think about that. I did not consider zombie mafia as a valid option. But now that you brought it up, it kind of makes sense.
Occasionally that
happens. Makes sense. Yeah, from time to time.
And, you know, to me, it's a power move. He's been powerless. He's been at everybody else's mercy. And now he wants other people to be at his mercy. He wants to have that. And that ought to be interesting, because how do you start describing what's happening? You know, murders that are going to be happening or zombie rages. And all this when with the police and with the public, and you know, I don't know, it could be really interesting. I'm curious to know if Blaine yet knows what Liv knows, in that eating the brain gives you those traits of the person whose brain you're eating. It just is really weird that that's just such normal conversation now, to talk about eating someone's brain. Is he aware of that? You know, like when he does eat, is he just eating?
I can't imagine he wouldn't. I can't imagine he wouldn't. Because, come on, if you eat somebody's... He has been eating brains for the past 6 months, if he remained, you know, himself. So at some point, something had to trigger a flashback and, you know, bring up a skill that he didn't previously have.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't imagine it never coming up.
But on the flip side, one of the reasons Liv knows is because of her exposure. She has the files on these people. She knows how they died. She's talking, you know, she's investigating with the police. You know, would she, if she hadn't known that Javier was this artist, would it have just been some emotion that she was coming through, that maybe it's just the effect of being a zombie, all these different changes? If she hadn't known that he was an artist and had all this passion and had blah, 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 if she hadn't known this guy was, you know, a psychopath, if she hadn't seen that, I mean, would she have realized those emotions are because of that brain if she didn't have this extra information, which he doesn't have? He's getting his brains on the street. You don't know where your drugs come
it's
from,
an interesting
you know.
Thing
you don't
to
know that the
explore.
You don't know that your brain is uncut.
Nice one.
Talking like
nice
I know about
one.
Drugs.
Well done. Side note, Once again, I'm apparently a queen of digression during this podcast.
You get that reward. Yeah.
Yeah. You remember how in last week's episode we talked about how we wondered how would those skills translate and whether or not they would remain after she stopped eating the brain? Mm-hmm. Apparently, the skills stay, because her rendition of the car, it was pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It was pretty good. So, I would say there's probably some residual effects. Yeah. I hope so. I think it's kind of like you learn from your experiences. Now, is she going to be able to paint something fantastic and beautiful and art gallery worthy? Maybe not. But yeah, that being able to be better at art than she was before, I think it's also because she's opened up her mind to that. Does that mean she's going to be a good trivia wizard? Maybe we should take her to the bar with us? And play the trivia nights. I would love to have her on my team, even though I'm pretty good with trivia. Although I really don't want to go to an I Dream of Jeannie trivia night. I really don't. One last thing I wanted to bring up was a line. I actually meant to talk about it earlier. Again, the whole Ravi-Liv dynamic. When she's talking about what happened with her and Major in the last episode to Ravi, and how everything happened, and da-da-da. And I texted the apology, and he hasn't contacted me back and all that, and Ravi just looks at her and says, "You texted an apology?" I love that the guy is the one that's going, "You don't text an apology, that's a face-to-face thing." I love those two together. I really do.
They are adorable, and we need more of them.
We do.
Hopefully more than one season.
Well, let's get through this season first. But so far, yes. I'm okay with continuing to watch the show. I know we were kind of, we'll give it time. We'll see what we think. I'm okay with continuing on for the 13 episode run. We have 10 more episodes left to watch. Next week will be Live and Let Clive.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
The one-line synopsis is, Clive refuses Liv's help when one of his former criminal contacts is murdered. So we have a little bit of a split here in our new partnership. But I think it's kind of cool because she's not, the clips that I saw, she's not really trusting him. And she's going to Ravi saying how, I don't know if we can trust him. And I think it's going to create some dissension between the two of, in the gang there. I'm wondering if it's going to lead to either in this episode or not too distant future of her letting Clive in on what it really is that her talent is. I don't know. Do you think Clive is going to learn anytime soon that she's a zombie?
I don't know. Because every time you have some sort of secret identity, in this case, Liv is a zombie. Shock. There's always this one person who doesn't know for the longest time.
Right.
I mean, don't even get me started on Arthur not knowing Merlin has magic. Do not go there. So, I have no idea. I would, depending on how they deal with it, it's fun for him to think she's a psychic. But at the same time, how awesome would it be if he knew she's a zombie, especially given the attitude he showed in the pilot.
Right.
Like, grandma is scratched, bam! Goodbye, grandma.
Exactly.
So, I'm torn on this one. I can't really tell you which I prefer, because both options have a certain appeal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we'll see.
I think he eventually does need to know. I'm hoping it actually plays out closer to some sort of play by Blaine and Team Zombie.
Mm.
That maybe they do something big and Clive's in on it, and that's when, almost like you have to let them. I can't do it. Babineau has to know. I have to tell him. I can't keep it a secret anymore, kind of a thing. And then you always have that thing where he then is kind of scared and pulls back from her. Because what? You're a zombie? You're like them? Like after he's seen maybe a full-on raging zombie.
Yeah.
And then she's one of them too. Awesome. Yeah. that could be really cool, really, really good. So I don't know. I actually do appreciate, though, that we're going to have this little rift, because we've now spent 3 episodes trying to bring Babineau and Liv together. I think we do need something that's going to test them. Maybe not break them apart, but at least test them. And to me, that also means that a few episodes later, I can see us having that thing that we were talking about earlier that tests that relationship between Liv and Ravi.
Yeah. So, you know, everything considered, we have some stuff to look forward to.
We definitely have some stuff to look forward to. Okay, so back to this episode, episode 3, The Exterminator, a.k.a. Two's Company, Three's a Horde. What would you, on the Sci-Fi for Chicks iZombie Hotness scale, rate this? What pepper on our Scoville scale here would you rate this episode?
I'm sticking with Tabasco.
Not tobacco. No smoking. No.
No, Tabasco. Hey, I'm recovering from a zombie virus. Give me a break.
How many brains have you eaten?
Rewind. Today? Yes. Oh, darling, you do not want to know. But I am sticking with Tabasco. I am sticking with a 7, because it was a strong episode. I didn't have secondhand embarrassment, so that was a plus. I liked it. I liked it, and it was a strong episode, and they should keep going like that.
I'm on the fence. I'm in between the feet here. Because my first instinct is to go Aleppo, a 6. But it almost seems like I want a little bit more. So I think it's an Aleppo pepper with a dash of cayenne. Just a little hint, like the cayenne pepper came near the Aleppo pepper. So I'm at a little 6+. I think they're growing. It's like I don't want to jump too high too fast, because we still have 10 more episodes in this season. But I definitely want to give it props that they're growing. Each episode, I think, is getting stronger and better. And so I'm going to go Aleppo, but like I said, it's like an Aleppo that maybe is growing near the cayenne pepper. They're right next door, so it's getting a little bit of that wafting over to it. Does that work?
They are basically not wasting their potential.
No, they're not.
That's one thing for sure. So this gives me, you know, a reason to be optimistic about the show and its future.
Definitely. Okay, so listeners, what about you? What would you rate episode 3, The Exterminator, on the Sci-Fi for Chicks iZombie Hotness scale? What kind of pepper would you pick? We want to know. You can email us, scififorchicks@scififorme.com. We would love to have you follow us on Twitter @scififorchicks. And of course, post there exactly, you know, tweet us which pepper you think this episode is worthy of. You can also give us a call on the hotline, 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI. That's my Chris Hardwick moment there, if anybody watches The Talking Dead. Speaking of The Talking Dead and Walking Dead, Alex and Doreen and Jennifer and I, we'll see if anybody else wants to join, but we are going to be doing a podcast about the women of The Walking Dead. So do make sure and subscribe to us on iTunes or the podcast platform of your choice under Sci-Fi for Chicks, so that you don't miss that as we talk some more wonderful walker zombie lovely wonderfulness with all these wonderful women of Walking Dead. And of course, go over to scififorme.com and like and follow and share and tweet and comment and all sorts of things over there. We dabble our feet over there every so often.
Yes, we do.
We will be back next week to talk about episode 4, Live and Let Clive, which will send Alex off onto a happy Easter weekend thinking about that next episode. Yeah. Thank you so much, Alex, for joining me for this episode. This was a good show you decided to pick. I'm happy that you suggested this one.
You're very welcome.
And she's going to hold that over my head for a really long time. Thanks, listeners.
Yes, I will.
We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Get out your pens. It's Trivia Tuesday.
I dream of Jeannie. Can you believe she was the idealized female for these guys? When she got uppity, just shove her back in the bottle.
What was the first Western to win Best Picture at the Oscars?
Good luck, Masters.
It all comes back to being called Master, doesn't it?
Cimarron, 1931.
Yeah, I'm horribly offended. Are you cool with me naming our trivia team Piggy in the Brain?
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.